Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
If you're not happy in your locker room, you can leave the locker room. You're not obligated to stay 4 or 5 years any longer. You have the ability to seek certain things if you're a player. I mean, all these things are great. And yet we're on national TV, what, Thursday nights, Friday nights, Saturday nights, Tuesday nights for some conferences. I just think we're in a great spot. Now there are some things that have to be worked on. We have to figure out how to have a little bit of a, I don't know, maybe some level playing field when it comes to understanding contracts or understanding how are we going to negotiate with kids that don't have lawyers or don't have agents. They're not NFL players. We have to figure out how we're going to make sure that kids are taken care of appropriately and you don't run into these weird contracts between other universities. But I think college football is in an amazing spot right now. And if you're coaching in the Big Ten, if you're coaching in the SEC, I think you're a pretty happy guy.
That is Jed Fish. He's now at Washington joining us to talk about it. Christian Capel on Montlake.com. He is the go-to for the University of Washington football coverage. How's Jed Fish been in the early days of camp here?
Yeah, pretty spirited, I would say. These first 2 days, it's kind of funny, you know, you look forward to the start of training camp and the position battles and how are they going to look. And these first 2 days have really been focused on fundamentals and drills and install. They have not taken a single rep through 2 days of 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 stuff. But we were able, you know, we were watching practice today and you could hear Jed Fish when he gathered the team at the end of the day, was emphasizing nutrition and wants guys to eat more, you know, eat more breakfast and you know, get bigger, wants a bigger team to compete in the Big Ten and to make sure they recover and rest well and everything. And he did say that, you know, it kind of starts in earnest tomorrow. They put the pads on. There's going to be more competition. They're going to be more getting after it. He was kind of getting after him today to pick the energy up a little bit. I think, you know, in any coach's perfect world, you don't need to have the pads on and lining up 11-on-11 to bring the energy of practice, but that's not always the case. But it sounds like they're ready to ramp it up a little bit tomorrow.
Give me an idea where the biggest questions position-wise arise in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, on the offensive line, certainly. And some of that is due to health. They've got a couple guys, Landon Hatchett and Guard Memelar, who I think they see as starters or starter caliber, who weren't around for the spring due to injury, and they're both kind of working their way back, and we'll kind of, you know, we'll see if those guys can play in the opener. Fish has said he's hopeful, but it's no sure thing. They brought in 3 transfers. Inok Bimahi, who's a guard from Ohio State, who looks like he's probably going to start. But there's a couple positions, left tackle that's up for grabs. And, you know, there's going to be some battles. And not just figuring out who their best 5 are, but also figuring out where those 5 best fit, because it's a bunch of guys who haven't played football together before. It's not even this spring. So that's probably the biggest focus. I mean, they got, I think, 3 starter caliber players at cornerback for 2 spots there. They brought in 2 veteran transfer safeties, so I'm sure expecting to play, but it would also bring back some pretty experienced safeties who have played a lot of Washington before. So some good competition in the back end. They got some stuff to figure out in the defensive interior too. I mean, they brought in transfers really just even through the spring window at basically every position, so with the exception of a couple. So there's some guys who you know, a receiver, Denzel Boston, Jeremiah Hunter, Giles Jackson. You know, you kind of know who the guys are going to be, a linebacker, but elsewhere there's still some stuff to sort out.
Christian, the Michael Penix void, is that the biggest loss, or do you look at, like, you know, just the coaching staff, Ryan Grubb, the overall turnover, you know, being a more, I guess, impactful thing than sort of some of the players who have moved on, you know, all those draft picks that left Washington? Is it more about the transition of coaching staff than the transition of talent, or is that a weird question?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reminding people, honestly, since before last season even ended, that, and then especially after Kalen DeBoer left, but just saying, hey, you know, I know all these guys who have gone in the portal and what they've lost through the draft. You got to remember, even if there wasn't a coaching change, this was still going to be a rebuild this year.
Yes.
You know, they still had gone out and had gotten Will Rogers from Mississippi State to replace Michael Penix and had their guys in the pipeline at receiver. And it was going to be a big transfer year for them. They were going to be, were going to be, to an even greater degree, really busy in the portal to fill things out and bring in and build a roster going into the year one in the Big Ten. Obviously, the coaching change exacerbated that and made it so that I think 84 scholarship guys and only 44 of them were on the roster at Washington last season. So it wouldn't have been that big of a turnover. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I think you kind of knew that that some shift was coming. You knew that, you know, you only had – really, I thought they got a year more out of Penix than anybody probably expected. I don't think anyone thought he would really stick around for 2 years necessarily. So losing the coaching staff, I think, was the bigger deal. I mean, big picture-wise, that disrupted – things across the entire roster at every position, and there's a lot of guys playing football at other schools right now who would probably still be at Washington if Kalen DeBoer were the head coach.
I left Big Ten Media Day higher on Washington than I entered it, in part because I just liked how put together Jed Fish was, and you know, the guy knows what he's doing. He sounded confident. I don't know if that has anything really to do with what's going to happen on the field, but did your mind shift at all going in, leaving? Because I looked around and saw Rutgers and Maryland and Illinois and Indiana, and I thought, there's some wins out there.
Yeah, I mean, this first Big Ten schedule for them, they kind of get to experience the haves and the have-nots of the conference, right? They got to go to Oregon at the end of the year. They got to host Michigan. They got to go to Penn State. They got to go to Iowa. But they also host Northwestern, and they go to Rutgers, and they go to Indiana. Now, that Rutgers game is probably looking a little trickier than you might have been convinced 2 years ago if someone told you they're playing Rutgers in a couple of years. I think they got things turned around there last year and got a star running back, and their arrow, you know, they're recruiting well, and their arrow is kind of pointing up. But, you know, it's a tough schedule. It's not a week-in, week-out gauntlet. You're right. There are some gettable games, and, you know, they don't have a big-time marquee non-conference opponent. And then they open with Big Ten play with Northwestern and go to Rutgers. So I know a lot of Husky fans saw that schedule when it first came out, and this was before Kalen DeBoer left and all that. But it saw that schedule and thought, that should be a 5-0 start. And then Michigan comes to Husky Stadium, and it's sort of game on from there. They host USC too. UCLA comes to Seattle. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know that I feel terribly different about them than I did in the spring necessarily. I think they added some interesting players. They added some length, some athleticism. Jed Fish has really hammered that they want size. They want big guys, I think, across the board. And, you know, they went out and got some guys defensively who I think are versatile, who kind of fall in that with Steve Belichick as their defensive coordinator, fall in that New England Patriots category of can play multiple positions and can move around. He can do different things with them and put them in different packages. So I'm eager to see how that all comes together. I think Jed Fish feels like they have a talented team. But right now it's a collection of individuals, and you know, over this next month or so, they're going to try to make it a team.
I want to look at that early season game, Apple Cup, September 14th. 12:30 kickoff on the schedule. Pat Chun, the athletic director there at Washington, says, you know, he expects ticket sales to pick up in front of that game. What do you think is keeping ticket sales down for that game right now?
Well, they're really expensive. I mean, that's the biggest factor. You know, I wrote a little about this a while back. I mean, Washington and Washington State, because remember, this is a neutral site game. It's not a home game for either of those teams. They are splitting the ticket sales, at least initially, and they're splitting the revenue 50-50 from all ticket sales. So it's not included in either school's season ticket package. And I think a lot of season ticket holders, at least from a Washington perspective, you know, they're used to paying what they pay for their season tickets, including their seat-related donation, you know, whatever that total is, and getting seven games. And this year, it's only six games, and now on top of it, you're being asked to spend, you know, if you want to sit between the goal lines, you're looking at a couple hundred dollars a ticket for the most part. Club seats are in the $300 to $400 range, and it's not necessarily that those seats are so much more expensive than they would be on a per-game basis for, like, a UW season ticket holder who sits in those sections. But when it's on top of a season ticket price that you already paid for, even though it is, you know, a seventh game and everything, I think it just it feels like a lot for people. And then it's also it's not the same product, right? It's the Apple Cup. It's Washington and Washington State, but it's not the regular season finale to a long college football season played on a campus the weekend of Thanksgiving, like it always has been. It's not a conference game. I think some shine has come off of it a little bit. And so from a Washington perspective, I know I've heard from a ton of fans who just don't see it as worth the price necessarily. And, you know, I think there's a lot of Wazoo fans who would just as soon never see Washington again. So I think that's factoring into it too.
Is that a close game in your mind?
I don't think there's any reason to believe that Washington's going to go in and steamroll them. You know, Wazoo is a program that has recruited and competed at a 500 or above 500 level at the Power 5 level for a while now. So, you know, their future's uncertain, but that roster didn't just become you know, a less than Power 5 roster overnight. There's still some talent on that team. I know John Mateer was an interesting guy at quarterback when he got into some games last year. I assume he'll win that job there. There's going to be all kinds of emotion, right? I mean, for Washington State playing a majority Mountain West schedule this year, that's their marquee game. You know, that's probably the best team they're going to play this year. I know there's some decent Mountain West programs too, but you know, it's still a rivalry game. There's, I imagine, a lot more, even more bitter feelings than there usually are around that. I'm sure Wazoo's going to be fired up for it. Until I see Washington's offense at work and kind of see how the trenches come together, especially the offensive line, I don't know that you're talking about them really, you know, blowing by too many opponents this year.
The Oregon game at the end of the year is a rivalry game. In most years, I think Oregon fans would have that game circled, but they do not this year, Christian. They are circling Ohio State. They're talking about Wisconsin. They go to Michigan. How does the Oregon game sit in the eyes of Washington fans as it sits on the schedule?
Yeah, I think, you know, whereas last year it was so easy to point to that, right? And you look at Oregon's schedule and Washington's schedule, and okay, both these teams are going to be 5-0 going into this game. They're going to be coming off a bye. They're both loaded, top 10. I mean, this is going to be an awesome game. I think the perspective on Washington's schedule this year is a little bit more like, hey, there's some other stuff to do first, right? I mean, the fact that it's the finale and that's now the Thanksgiving weekend rivalry game, you know, people are thinking about that first trip to Rutgers, and people are thinking about the rematch against Michigan at Husky Stadium and how tough the Iowa trip is going to be, and they're the whiteout game on the road against Penn State. So I think there's so many, like, milestones and big games and really challenging, difficult games on the schedule before Oregon that I don't know that anybody's necessarily got that circled just because there's so many other high-profile hurdles before then. But, yeah, it's going to be weird. You know, I like that, and it was an obvious move, but, you know, I like that they've you know, settled on that being the last game for each team now. I mean, it's not the Apple Cup. It's going to take some getting used to, but it is – I think it'll be fun that when you get to Game 12, you know, that regular season finale, that you know you're getting Washington-Oregon as part of that weekend.
Christian Capel covers Washington. His website, onmontlake.com, does a great job covering that program. If you want to know what's going on with Washington, make sure you're following his work. Christian, the departure of DeBoer, you mentioned it. A lot of Oregon State fans mad at Jonathan Smith for leaving, but understand why. You know, Washington State fans mad at Pat Chun for leaving, but down deep they understand why. Does the Washington fan down deep understand why Kalen DeBoer did what he did, or is there still some lingering feelings?
It depends which of them you talk to, I think.
Right?
I think there is a more pragmatic crowd that says, oh, look, it's Alabama, you know, and it's Alabama after Nick Saban. See, the way I've always looked at it is, I think it's easy to say, well, that's, you don't want to be the guy to follow the legend, right? That's always the conventional wisdom. Knowing Kalen DeBoer, I would think that was probably a selling point for him. That, look, hey, only one person. I mean, Alabama's going to have coaches and coaches and coaches throughout the rest of time here as college football is played. But only one person gets to be the guy who follows Nick Saban and try to take the torch and keep it going and win championships and, you know, prove that you can do that. And I think Kalen DeBoer is a competitive, confident enough guy that I think he takes that challenge head on. I would bet that was an enticing factor and not a detriment for him. But you know, there are still Husky fans, I think, who look and say, "Gosh, you had a huge contract put in front of you. You took this program right to the national championship game, so you know it can be done. You know, everything you want to achieve in college football is here. Look, the school's going to the Big Ten. You know, you could have stayed here forever and won big and had a statue built for you." But I do think deep down for most people, there's an understanding that, look, you want to coach at the very highest level, and Alabama comes open and they want you to be the guy to follow Nick Saban. I think for somebody cut from Kalen DeBoer's cloth, that's a difficult thing to say no to.
I guess I want to know, I had things that I thought about that crossed my mind at Big Ten Media Days that I had not considered before. Did you leave there thinking about anything that maybe you hadn't considered, or what was that experience like for you to kind of get a taste of what that conference is about?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was a pretty quick trip. I remember when the schedule came out, seeing, okay, it's 3 days and Washington goes the last day. Yeah, I don't really need to be there on Tuesday and Wednesday. I'm going in Wednesday night. I'll cover Washington's time there. It's interesting, the contrast between Washington and Oregon. They're the two Northwest schools. They were the cream of the crop in the Pac-12 last year. They played two really, I mean, just awesome, close football games. And it's Oregon that comes in. You know, Washington won both of those and got to the national title game, but it's Oregon that comes into the Big Ten with most of the fanfare. I don't know. I mean, was it your impression on that Thursday? It kind of seemed like Oregon was the big deal that day. And I know Michigan talked that day too, and there's always going to be a lot of attention around Michigan, but it kind of seemed like Oregon, at least among the six teams who spoke that Thursday, sort of was the center of gravity a little bit there.
Yeah, it was. And I even think it started 2 days earlier because they threw that duck in the river and people got asked about Oregon. It was really smart by Oregon. And then day two kind of became about, is USC, do they belong on that upper echelon, you know, with Ohio State and Oregon? And the prevailing thought was, no, they aren't. They don't deserve to be there right now. And that kind of became the storyline. And then Thursday, yeah, you're right, it was all about Oregon. But I thought Jed Fish and Dan Lanning, when they got up there, Christian, both of them were really impressive. I thought they were two of the more impressive coaches among the, you know, bazillion coaches who spoke, the 18 coaches who spoke. It's just weird to see that over 3 days, but really strong, charismatic people up on the stage.
Yeah, you know, both were very prepared, I think very comfortable with that role. It's one thing to coach football and love the X's and O's and love the relationship building and, you know, being in the trenches with the players and all those sorts of things, and you need to be all that to be a great coach. But I do think that both Fish and Lanning kind of embrace the, I don't want to say political, but it is a political job. Chris Peterson said that all the time, that, look, this is a political job and I'm not a political person, so I hate the political part of it. But yeah, I mean, there is a political, like, and also sales element to it, where you're representing your program anytime you get to put on a suit and tie and talk about them in public. And I think those two guys, you know, very on message. They had their talking points that they wanted to get across, and they hit him well. I think Jed Fish was wise to nod to the last couple years, that as much, you know, all the talk about Washington since January 9th, the day after the title game, has been future, future, future. And I think that's rubbed some people out here the wrong way, that, look, you know, this team went 14-1 last year, and because the coach left, all anybody wants to talk about is the roster and, you know, going to the Big Ten and next year. And it seemed like the world sort of moved on from Washington's 2023 season before a lot of people around Washington were ready to. So I think for Fish to get up there and say, hey, you know, he talked about the roster and he talked about the transfers and the Arizona influence and all that and all the newness that they were going to have to meld together, but also said, you know, this program has beaten Oregon 3 times in a row. This program has beaten Texas the last 2 times they played. He pulled out, too. I mean, he had to dig deep for this one, but they've beaten USC the last 2 times they played. You got to go back to 2019 for the second meeting. But today, you know, they're 25-3 in their last 2 seasons. And look, it's still Washington. And, you know, just because so much has changed, it can still be that kind of program. I thought that was a nice little nod to the coaching staff that preceded him there.
Christian Capel, you do a fantastic job. Yeah, on Montlake.com. Keep up the fight, man. You're turning out great work. I don't think there's anybody better on that beat. So if you want to know what's going on Montlake.com, follow him on Twitter. Christian Capel, thank you.
All right, thank you.
There he goes. I love that. I love that we checked in with Washington State, checked in with Washington. Oh, we're getting to Oregon State and Oregon. We are. Keith Hayward, rather, the defensive coordinator at Oregon State, due on the show tomorrow. Leave it here. You got the BFT.